If you take a class on Buddhism in a college, or you read an introductory book on Buddhism, they often start with the Four Noble Truths. And when the Buddha taught the Five Brethren, that's what he started with too. But with a lot of people, he didn't. He saw that their minds had to be readied, prepared to accept the Four Noble Truths and work with them in a way that actually got results. And his preparation was something called the Graduated Discourse. And it's reported several times in the canon, but it's never transcribed. In other words, we don't really know exactly what he said. It's just a series of topics. But you read the series of topics and you get an idea of what the Buddha is doing. He starts out with generosity, talking about how good it is to be generous. Of course, this means generous not only with your material wealth, but also with your time, with your concern for other people, with your respect, with your forgiveness. There's that phrase we had just now in the chant, respect and welcoming guests. It relates to the fact that the Buddha said if you're stingy with the Dharma, there's no way you're going to get into right concentration. So when people come here, we're happy to share the Dharma with them as a way of opening our own minds. Because after all, the benefits of generosity are both social and individual. Social in the sense of how other people respond to your generosity, and also the quality of the mind that you develop. It's like living in a very large house as opposed to living in a narrow little apartment. There's a lot of space in a generous mind. And if the Buddha saw that the person listening to the talk was receptive and had some experience with generosity, he'd go on to virtue. Virtue, too, is a gift. He would talk about the benefits of virtue, both, again, social and personal. Abstaining from killing, stealing, illicit sex, lying, and taking intoxicants. Being a person with principles, in the sense of self-esteem that comes from that. And if the Buddha saw that he was talking with people who didn't have much experience with these things, sometimes he would stop there. It's a principle throughout the canon that to develop right view, it's not just a matter of having the right views, but it's also having some practical experience and putting into practice some of the actions that the Buddha recommends. You can have mundane right view, but you're not ready for transcendent right view until you have some time spent in right action, right speech, right mindfulness, attempting right concentration. So it's not just theory on its own, it's theory augmented by practice. And you begin to develop your understanding a lot more, because you begin to see that the benefits the Buddha talks about are real. Then the Buddha would also go on, if he saw that you're ready for virtue, to accept the fact that this was a good thing, you talk about heaven, the rewards in heaven. It's really interesting, you look in the canon, there are very few descriptions of heaven. There's just one passage where he talks about the joys of being a king, and he says those joys of being a human king are nothing compared to the joys of heaven. But he doesn't go into a lot of detail, perhaps because he knew that if you went into a lot of detail, that's where people would stop right there. Sounds really good. But he wanted to take them further. After talking about the joys of heaven, he would remind them, though, that because the causes of going to heaven are impermanent, heaven itself is impermanent. You don't just go there and stay for eternity. You get there as a result of actions that are temporary. So the heaven itself is going to be temporary. Think about that. There are some teachings where they say you have temporary actions, but they can get you into heaven for eternity And you realize there must be something else going on. It's not just your actions. There's no way that a few temporary actions could have an eternal result. It actually downgrades the attention that we pay to our actions. But if you realize that your actions are what determines everything, you're going to pay a lot of attention to your actions, what you're doing, saying, and thinking. Try to be really careful about it. But even the best heavens are impermanent. This is where the Buddha would go on to talk about the drawbacks of sensuality. But the passage actually says not only the drawbacks, but also the degradation. In other words, that a fascination with thinking about sensual pleasures really pulls the mind down. Not only pulls you down from heaven, but it pulls you down right here, from what the mind is capable of. After all, the definition of right concentration starts when you are secluded from sensuality. In other words, you've put aside your thoughts about sensual pleasures, your plans for what you'd like to eat or touch or taste or see. You can just be in the present moment. So to do that, you have to see that there are drawbacks to sensuality. At the very least, there must be something better. Because that's what the talk moves on to. Once you see the drawbacks of sensuality, the heavens are inconstant, and the lower realms are pretty bad. In contrast to the Buddha's lack of descriptions of heaven, there are some pretty graphic descriptions of hell. And sometimes you wouldn't have to bother with hell, just say, look at the common animals, see how they suffer. And once you see that the drive to keep coming back to these levels basically is based on sensuality, he says that's when you begin to see that renunciation is a place of safety, a state of mind that would pull you out of that. The state of mind where you can be at your ease right now and not have to be hungering after your sensual plans. Once you are on board with that, that's when he would teach the Four Noble Truths. And even though the Four Noble Truths are a matter of right view, all the path is in there. So when we're practicing concentration, think a bit about what's leading us here. One of the emotions induced by the graduated path is one of Sangvega. Talks about how good things can get based on ordinary good actions, generosity, virtue. But then it ends. And we keep going around and around and around. And the universe has no plan. That's another chant we do often, and there's no one in charge. There's no first mover with some plan for what this is all about. And it's both scary but also liberating. It means you don't have to find out what the plan is and get with the plan. You can have your own plan. You can see that the ending of suffering is something really worthwhile and that you can dedicate yourself to it. We do that by training the mind, developing mindfulness, alertness, ardency, as we try to stay with the breath, stay with the events in the mind in the present moment. Mindfulness is not just watching things coming and going, but it's remembering what's skillful and what's not skillful, so that when you recognize what's coming up through your alertness, you've got a construct, you've got a framework for deciding what should be done. And then ardency is what tries to do it. So right now we see that the mind wandering around is in a place of danger, and the mind that settles down is a place of safety. Think of that image of the quail. Quail wandered away from the place where it was safe and it gets caught by a hawk. And it complains as it's being carried off, oh, if I hadn't wandered away, this hawk would have been no match for me. Well, the hawk hears that. Probably thinks, what in this little snippet of a quail, what does it think it is? So it lets the quail go. He says, okay, go there to your safe place, but you won't escape me. So the quail goes to a field where clods of earth and stones have been turned up by a plow. He stands on one of the stones and says, okay, come and get me. So the hawk swoops down, and just as the quail knows that the hawk is getting near it, it jumps behind the stone. And the hawk shatters its breast on the stone. And the Buddha says, that field stands for the four establishings of mindfulness. The area away from the field stands for your fascination with sensuality. It's not that sensual objects are bad, but the mind, as it's going around planning for sensual things, is putting itself in a lot of danger. Or as it comes in and stays with its object, it develops mindfulness, it develops into concentration. This is your place of safety. So sometimes when you have trouble getting the mind to settle down, give yourself your own graduated discourse about all the things that you find alluring out in the world, and then realizing, okay, they have their drawbacks. And if the mind gets fascinated and infatuated with them, they can pull you down. Whereas you get the mind into concentration, it pulls you up. Out of a place of danger into a place of safety. And that can be one way of motivating yourself so that things will settle down.